This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. You're listening to the UAE's number one talk radio station.
This is Afternoons on Dubai Eye 103.8.
I'm Helen Farmer, experts galore on today's episode. We were in conversation with Dr. Rina from Serenity Dental Clinic. She reckons she's got a gadget that can make your time in the chair painless, believe it or not. We were also talking health of your eyes with Moorfield Eye Hospital. Could you be a good candidate for corrective surgery? Getting literally breaking news on all things education with Mr. Darren Gale from Horizon International School and Dr. Neil Hopkin of Fortis Education as we talk about distance learning and agility of schools during times of difficulty. And in Pets and Vets, hearing about a new platform and Dr. Michaela of Vienna on hand as we talked about putting our animals at ease and, of course, taking your questions too. I don't say this lightly, but ooh la la, what a couple of days. From the roads to schools to work to, well, homes. It has been a really, really challenging time and I truly hope you are well, your family is safe. Your home is secure, your car is okay. And when it comes to the kids, that your sanity is in check because distance learning is back. I personally got a bit of PTSD when I saw the Seesaw app popping up yesterday. And we're talking to the educators this half hour to get a bit of a read on what's going on about maybe going back, but also what happens behind the scenes. One of my favourites, Mr. Darren Gale is with us today, the principal at Horizon International School. How are you, Mr. Gale?
Good afternoon. Lovely to talk to you again. I am here. I'm surviving. We're okay.
Well, I really appreciate your time. Now, I actually got sent your email by a friend yesterday, which was a screenshot of what you sent out to the school community. And I didn't realise it was from you until I scrolled down and I was reading it going, gosh, that is an absolute masterclass in communication and compassion. And that's why I wanted to get you on today, because I wondered if you wouldn't mind perhaps summarising the message you were giving to your school community, Mr. Gale.
Oh, thank you very much. I mean, it's not just a decision that I make. It's a collective. You know, we have wonderful teams that we work with and we all work well and closely together. And it's going back to the school ethos and what we stand for. And common sense has to prevail. Schools are so much more than just educational institutions banging out GCSEs and A-levels. The community looks to us for guidance and support and direction and also to steady the ship. And it's about keeping the main thing, that when we saw the enormity of what was unfolding in front of us, you have to be practical and press pause on learning. And there's some bigger things that needed to be addressed and focused on as the storm passed through. And I also believe passionately as well is when we're presented with these crises, look at COVID, the pandemic, you know, we've had to shut our schools before. The way we respond is the way we role model to our children about how they should cope and go about things mm-hmm. that will happen to them in the future.
Absolutely.
And
right.
So it was about saying, you know, we're in this together. Reach out if you need to. Learning is important, but actually, you know, our homes and our safety comes above everything.
Well said indeed. We saw a huge amount of agility coming out of the education space during the pandemic. And, you know, good grief, teachers teaching kids in the classroom, teaching kids online. And then suddenly it's like, bam, we're back into that headspace. How does a school respond to a directive that there's going to be remote learning? Obviously, in this case, it was for safety reasons. What happens behind the scenes? Can you lift the lid a little bit?
I think coming out of the pandemic, we really had to address and adjust the way we operated schools. And constantly, I don't think there's a school leader in Dubai that doesn't think we could go back to distance learning at a click of a finger. And so many of the systems and processes that came out of the pandemic, schools have kept going. So you're always ready to do what we could call the martini of learning, anytime, any place, anywhere. And school leaders and schools are making innumerable decisions on a day-to-day basis of a range of different things. So, you know, when it comes to distance learning, you just go into automatic pilot mode. Let's do this, let's do this, let's do this, let's do this.
And it's
right,
amazing.
All the ducks are in the row.
Yeah.
It's and all the ducks are in a row. And you then think, right, now let's check in with the people and make sure everybody's safe and reassured and valued.
Just quickly, Mr. Gale, what about logistics? You know, clean up at the school. I've just been sent videos of a friend's school, which is a pond right now. What's happening at Horizon International and the cleanup efforts there?
Honestly, I mean, the unsung heroes of school. I'm sure every school across this city has had teams working tirelessly, but at HIS, the 36 hours, they haven't gone home. It was limiting damage and cleaning up damage, responding, preventing, you know, all across cognitive groups of schools, all pulling together, you know, the will to make sure that our schools were as operational, as safe as soon as possible. Unquestionable support and dedication. Cleanups, you know, putting tarpaulin up, adjusting sails, pulling things in from outside, extra cleaners. I mean, it's all going on and still all going on. And whilst we look at the roads and it seems to be clearing up, we mustn't underestimate the cleanup operation that will take some time.
Quite right. Well, well done on all of the efforts. Thank you so, so much. All the very best for the coming days. And well done on everything you've done so far. Mr. Gale speaking to us from Horizon International School. Talking education, my goodness, there's lots going on at the right now. There's lots going on at my house as my kids are wrestling with Seesaw, and maybe yours are too. We have just heard that UAE government schools are continuing distance learning. Just been hearing there from Mr. Darren Gale from Horizon International about some of their cleanup efforts and how their philosophy is very much on community, that children learn when they feel safe and maybe a couple of days. It's not the end of the world if they're not up to date. Can I ask you, Dr. Neil of Fortis Education, how you are? Are you dry? Are you safe? How are the schools?
Well, I'm sitting here with my rubber duck, Helen, just hoping that that might actually get us through. No, things are very good. And I would just echo Darren's comments in terms of how impressed we are with all of our support staff at Fortis Schools, who've done an amazing job, and their colleagues across the whole of Dubai in all of the schools of all different shapes and sizes, where really our support workers deserve our thanks and praise. I really understand how you felt, Helen, in terms of the reemergence of post-traumatic stress of COVID. It does look as though we're going to have a little more period. In fact, I can, while Noni was speaking, we received notification that from the media office in Dubai that the government of Dubai has extended remote learning across private schools in the Emirate until Thursday and Friday as well. So government schools and now private schools appear to be on distance learning for the remainder of this week. I think that's sensible. I think it is very important that our schools are safe places. There are two sides to safety, aren't there, and parental opinion. One is about the aesthetics of the school. Does it look and smell nice after you've had so much rain pouring through it? And the other, of course, is whether it's safe.
Absolutely.
And we don't want to welcome thousands of children back into our schools until our engineers have had opportunities to poke every ceiling tile and look at every wall socket.
Absolutely.
And check
there's that, and there's also the logistics around getting to the school as well, you know, making sure that the roads, the infrastructure, you know, parking around the schools is going to be safe. If people are panicked and stressed, the environment that that can create when you're on a time crunch. So I agree with you. I'm not looking forward to facilitating my children's distance learning, because back in 2020, one child, she was an FS, easy. Now I've got children. I mean, I'm a journalist. I'm a writer. Some of the questions my children are being asked in year four around English, I'm like, I have absolutely no idea what that is. I don't know what you're asking me. I don't know how to work this out. I'm Googling this privately from my bathroom so I could pretend to help you here. It's got a lot more challenging.
Yeah, we only organise these events just to keep you on your toes, really, Helen.
Can I ask what happens, though, in situations where, for example, in secondary, you might have exams scheduled? I know some schools have had GCSEs teed up for this week. What happens logistically there?
It's a real problem. Every school every school has different examination boards that they may be ascribing to. And so what they do is they communicate and connect with those examination boards, who are normally very prompt in responding, and so they arrange, is it possible that we might delay this for a day or so? Of course, there are problems with that. because it's all to do with confidentiality and whether or not students are able to participate in particular exams under some of the circumstances. If that extends beyond a certain length of time, then actually the school connects with the examination board and other forms of assessment are able to take place to decide how to grade the students because of absence for very good reason. That's the official phrase that they use, absence for very good reason.
I think we can offer up some footage to support that.
Yes.
I think we can. And lastly, you know, as a parent, as an educator, managing expectations around our distance learning over the next few days, you know, how can we best support our children and indeed stay sane, Dr. Neil Hopkin?
Well, I think, I mean, that's a great question because I think it's a game of two halves, isn't it? There are children that are of a certain age where actually they're able to do some distance independent learning well. Different schools operate it in different ways. Some of them are asynchronous, and so they give work to the children that at some other point in time the children can complete, and others do it synchronously with the teacher and the children in the same virtual space. But in reality, I think it really comes down to age difference. And we saw that, Helen, didn't we? You and I both saw that in COVID, and that the very young children really struggle. I would encourage parents where their personal circumstances make it possible. I would encourage them to take advantage of the fact that there's a little bit more sunlight. Maybe we can get out a little bit onto a balcony or onto some outdoor space if that's possible where your listeners are living. Take the opportunity to do some of those quality things that you don't always get the opportunity to do in the week. Take a little walk, do a little drawing, have some long chats with your child, do some creative thinking together.
Can I just interject though? A lot of us are working. That's the problem. I think that's been the struggle that I'm hearing from a lot of people. It's like the kids are distance learning. I've got work to do. I might be working from home to stay off the roads, but I've still got deadlines to hit and I've still got to be cracking on. And then it falls to our helpers and, you know, a bit of scrabbling. It's a real challenge.
I would encourage your listeners to engage with their schools and engage for every parent to engage with their child's class teacher and say, can you give me some activities that that perhaps my nannies or helpers will be able to engage with and facilitate for the children to keep them engaged and a large variety. So as always, my advice would be to engage with the school. The teachers are all online and working. And so actually you can engage. And if you have a couple of minutes, you could throw an email to the teacher and have a discussion about, you know, I'm talking with my nanny, they're struggling with this particular thing, could you offer some activities this afternoon that would occupy them in this particular way or that particular way? As ever, communication is key between parents and school, so don't feel that just because we're back into the distance learning that you're disconnected from the school. You're not, and advise them how to support you better.
Dr. Neil Hopkin, can I just get clarity on what we just heard earlier? We have had in the news that the UA government schools are continuing distance learning throughout the week, but you have heard, you at Fortis Education,
I'm looking here. Yes, I'm looking here at a notice from the Government of Dubai media office. The Government of Dubai has extended remote learning across private schools in the Emirate until Thursday and Friday, April the 18th and 19th. So that's the image that we've seen and is now circulating amongst the principals that are all leading private schools here in Dubai.
Really appreciate your efforts, your insights as ever, Dr. Neil. It always does come back to communication. And thank you so much for your time today. I'm going to get your wellies on. Go get those schools sorted out, because Monday, I think our parents are going to be shoving our kids through the doors.
They are.
Really appreciate your time. Dr. Neil Hopkin speaking to us from Fortis Education. The doctor is in the house. We love introducing you to the experts. We love allowing you access to experts that are normally very, very fully booked, and we get to steal them away from clinic for a bit of a chat and to answer any questions that might be on your mind. In short, I love saving you a trip in the car, especially today, and maybe some bills as well. So later in the show, it's Pets and Vets. Today, it's your dental clinic and Dr. Renna joining us from Serenity Dental Clinic. I am so lovely and so grateful to have stolen you away. How are you, Doctor?
Thank you so much, Helen. I'm absolutely fine. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me on the show.
I would have preferred you to be in the studio, but we're trying to keep everyone safe and off the roads. But this is better than nothing. Next time.
I hope this sounds okay. I decided not to try and risk life and limb together.
Wise. Very wise indeed. But we can, of course, answer, well, some questions that I have for you. But of course, anything coming in on 4001, there's the ARN Play app, there's the WhatsApp, or you're more than welcome to give us a call. That's 0487155500. You can be anonymous if you like. I guess my first question, and I know you've been asked this before, why did you want to be a dentist? It's one of the jobs that I just think, gosh, that's got to be a calling, because I'm sure you see some sights. What was the motivation?
So actually, it was very, very clear for me. I was 17, trying to look for what I was going to do at university, thinking about my profession and, you know, chopping and changing. And at that age, the world is your oyster. You can do anything you want to do. And then in the end, I thought to myself, actually, I know what I want to do. Whatever I do, I want to help people. That was my motivating factor. My father, God rest his soul, was a doctor, pediatrician, very well-known one in Iraq. And then I thought, I spoke to him and I said, okay, Dad, I'm going to be a doctor like you. And it was actually him who said to me, actually, don't be a doctor, be a dentist. And I thought, really, why? I didn't really have any experience of that. So he said, no, it's better for you. It's better for a woman, you know, work-life balance. And he's talking to some...
Was he right in terms of work-life balance? Because I've heard a lot of dentists get understandably quite stressed out.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's talking to a 17-year-old who's thinking, you know, marriage, children. But he was absolutely right. I mean, but the main thing was that I decided to go and do some work experience. And I would advise any young person, any profession they want to go into, go and do work experience, because I was so fortunate that I ended up doing it with an absolutely lovely, lovely dentist. And he was just phenomenal. He was so kind and generous. And I really saw dentistry from the other side, from not being a patient, but from the other end. And, you know, the psychological impacts and benefits of improving people's smiles and then getting people out of pain on a day-to-day basis, building trust, getting rid of phobias. And I thought, wow, this is just amazing. It's so rewarding. And I really ignited a passion in me since, and thankfully not faded. And aww, I absolutely love what I do.
I wish you'd be my dentist when I was a kid, because I think an awful lot of people have quite an intimidating interaction as a child. And it's often a man, and it's often someone who seems very tall and their room is very sterile and there's lots of kind of metal clanking around and you're not in control and they have all the information and the power. And I feel like that dynamic has certainly changed a lot since, you know, I've been a grown-up, and I'm so grateful to people like you who can create a more, you know, inclusive and, dare I say it, pleasant or fun experience for children and for adults. You know, how do you deal with grown-ups that come into the clinic who, you know, and often quite rightfully so, might have a phobia based on previous experiences, doctor?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was just talking to my patient the other day about their awful experience. And I was actually telling them, you know, it's an extremely vulnerable position to be in, to be lying there on your back, you know, with things kind of coming into your peripheral vision, not really knowing what's happening. And it's really, really very frightening. And so actually, part of the reason why I set up my own clinic, which is something that I've been wanting to do, actually, by the time I opened it, it had been 10 years in the making that I was trying to get to, and then finally managed to achieve it. And I specifically called it Serenity Dental Clinic because I really wanted to showcase that it's a place that you can come, that is calm, relaxing. Patients that walk in say it almost feels like a spa rather than a dental clinic. You know, it's not got the smell or the sound or the sight of a dental clinic. You don't have that awful Eugenol smell that even I remember as a child.
So we're doing things differently, and we can help out people between now and 3 o'clock. We're going to be talking next a little bit about pain. How has technology in dentistry changed since Dr. Renner has been in the industry? And of course, we're going to go to your questions too. We've had a message from Delia asking when to take your baby to the dentist for the first time. I've also had a message asking about, could it be a dry socket? I don't know, but I'm guessing our doctor of the hour will. We're going to unpack that message next. Dr. Rena is with us from Serenity Dental Clinic, on hand to answer my questions, but most importantly yours. Can we talk pain? Doctor, let's address the elephant in the dentist chair. How do you feel technology has changed in the last decade or so to help reduce that fear factor, that pain factor? Maybe there are things happening that we as patients might not know about that you're pretty proud to have in your toolkit.
Yeah, well, I think first of all, Helen, we can't talk about pain without discussing fear and anxiety because they are so interlinked. All the science shows unequivocally that actually the more anxiety, the more fear you have, you will actually experience more pain. So the setup of Serenity Dental Clinic really tackles and deals with that from the very start of when you come and you actually bring your car. We have valet parking, so you don't have any of the stress of parking and you're not flustered trying to get in for your appointment. To the moment you walk in the door, and then obviously you're greeted by our staff who are really experienced and kind and ethical. So then that builds that trust, because when you have a trust in a person or an institution, you instantly start to feel more relaxed and the fear reduces. And then obviously when you come into the dental chair in the dental clinic, we actually have business class dental chairs with memory foam seating. So, and really comfortable headrests. So with those long procedures, you know, if you're sinking down into a comfortable chair that's got memory foam, and we can even provide back massages, again, that relaxation, will just really help alleviate that anxiety.
What about then entertainment? Do you have a screen? I had four wisdom teeth taken out and I was given Xanax in the National Geographic documentary and I was pretty happy, to be completely honest.
I mean, as much as possible, we try and avoid any kind of medication because we want patients
here for it.
We want patients to associate, you know, going to the dentist with more pleasant, happy memories to kind of desensitize them. We do have gas and air saying that, which does help massively. But we use it as a tool to kind of bridge, as a bridge to get them through and over that anxiety so that eventually they can start doing it themselves. And we have TVs on the ceiling with beautiful, relaxing scenery and gorgeous spa music. For children, it's amazing because they can have their cartoons and their distractions. So that's really great. And then we have the very, I think, really important thing we have is two things. One of them is we use rubber dam for every single procedure and every single patient. What that does is it isolates the area and keeps it really sterile and clean so we can do absolutely the best treatment possible. But very importantly for the patient experience, they're not getting water and debris and all that horrible stuff going into their mouth constantly. Mm-hmm. So actually what patients end up doing is really dissociating from that part of their body that we're working on in a very quiet, calm, you know, light manner. So actually most of my patients genuinely fall asleep when I'm doing treatment and nobody believes that. I had an 8-year-old girl, literally her head just flopped over to the side because she just completely was out of it. Oh. So we often get snorers and things like that because the patients are so relaxed. And then, and the game changer, I think the most important thing we have is the painless electronic injection, which is absolutely phenomenal. It's called Quick Sleeper. I was the first dentist in the UAE to start using it 7 years ago. And the moment I picked it up and saw what it could do, I actually use it exclusively for everything. I haven't actually picked up a regular syringe for 7 years. Mm-hmm. And when I look at it now, it seems so archaic and medieval piece of equipment, you know, compared to my electronic pen, the Quick Sleeper, which is painless.
Quick Sleeper. I want one.
Yeah. Oh, it's amazing. Honestly, it's painless. So for adults, and I mean for children alike, because the thing with children is if you hurt them with the injection, then it's very difficult to then go on to do the procedure because the trust is gone. They think she's hurt me. Everything you do from then on, they're gonna be in pain. So not only is it painless, but it works immediately. So there's no waiting around for it to get numb. And it was profound, really good anesthesia. Because I don't know if, I'm sure viewers out there have had an injection, the dentist has started, and then, ow, they suddenly feel pain. And that's because with traditional anesthesia, we're not actually numbing the root of the tooth. We're actually numbing all the areas around, hoping that the anesthetic will penetrate and reach some of the nerves around the tooth to try and get it numb. So often you would be working as a dentist. I remember I would be sort of quite tense thinking, I hope this tooth is numb because all the symptoms are there. Their lip is numb, their tongue is numb, their face is practically falling off. You know, everything's just numb.
But the bit you want can elude you.
Exactly. That's because of the way we did it. So with Quick Sleeper, that removes all of that and you don't have any of the associated numbness.
Yeah. We've got some messages to get through. 4001 if you want to pick the brains, get some clarity on terms or indeed symptoms with Dr. Rena, who's speaking to us today from Serenity. If you've got anything to put our way, now is the time. Delia saying, just wondering when people typically take their baby to the dentist for the first time. Ours is 3 months old, no teeth yet. Good question.
So the answer, you're a mum as well. Yeah, very good question. Excellent. We very answer to that is very simple. As soon as the first tooth pops out, which is around about 6 months old. So as soon as you see that first tooth, start bringing your little child to the dentist. Number one, not just because we're checking the teeth and making sure that they are erupting and coming out in the right order, but also actually to start that sensitization process of getting the child used to coming to the dentist. Mm-hmm. And not the first experience is having injection and fillings, but actually a pleasant, fun experience where they get stickers and get to watch movies. And our kids actually get hot chocolate as well, which we provide, because one of the big, big factors is education. If I can get the patients in early, I can start educating the patients of how to look after their child's mm-hmm. teeth and make sure that they won't have decay and they won't have any fillings and treatments in the future.
We are going to go to the tech line. As I said, we've had a message about having a wisdom tooth taken out yesterday. Jax is in a huge amount of pain. And Juliet saying, I avoided the dentist for too long. I had to have 7 fillings at my last appointment and I might need root canal. Just want to talk about success rates. So Dr. Rena needs to offer hopefully a bit of reassurance coming your way, Juliet. Wouldn't want a bit of free advice. Dr. Rena is with us today from Serenity Dental Clinic. We've just been talking about how fear can make pain worse and offering up some free advice now on the text line. Jax has messaged in saying, good timing, guys. I had my second tooth removed on Monday. When the local anaesthetic wore off, it was sore, but otherwise fine, just tender. Same thing yesterday. Today, though, it's a constant throbbing pain. The whole jaw on the side of the removal feels like I can't fully open it. And it's literally throb, 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 no break. No let up. It's a really weird feeling. Pain medication is not touching it. It's as if something has broken, if that makes sense. The tooth came out easily. I'm wondering, should I go back to the dentist or is this part of the normal healing process? Oh, Jax, that sounds rotten. What comes to mind, doctor?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, poor thing. It sounds possibly like it may well be a dry socket. That's something that I always tell my patients about, so at least they can anticipate it and manage it. Ways that you can actually prevent it before the tooth's taken out is we do things like a very atraumatic gentle extraction. Afterwards, we put hyaluronic acid in the socket to try and help promote healing. Afterwards, I always tell patients to make sure they take lots of vitamin C, their vitamins, normal vitamins, but specifically vitamin C for healing. Lots of fluids, obviously rest. And, you know, make sure you're taking your painkillers. Now, painkillers have to be taken a very specific way. Often patients wait till they get the pain and then take it. Whereas my protocol is always take your ibuprofen and your paracetamol. Make sure you take your ibuprofen with food so it doesn't upset your stomach. And make sure you're alternating them. So actually, you're taking a tablet every 2 hours. So you can take your paracetamol, say, for example, 12 o'clock. Then your ibuprofen at 2 o'clock, then another dose of paracetamol at 4 o'clock. And that very gentle, slow sort of titration of painkillers will really, really help in that scenario. Ice pack over the area as well will help to calm and reduce the inflammation. Now, a dry socket is not actually an infection, it's an inflammation. So it's just swelling and tender area. So basically, all the things I talked about, anti-inflammatories, will really, really help. It does completely go by itself after 2 weeks. But I would say if you're in a lot of pain, then go back and visit the dentist, because we can actually irrigate it, rinse it out and put a very soothing dressing into that. And just to make sure and just to check the area is all OK, because they're more common also in smokers, in, you know, patients who have some sort of immune deficiency and also very difficult extractions, particularly wisdom teeth extractions. But I would say if he's in a lot of pain, don't suffer. Don't wait it out.
Don't
do go
be
back
a hero, Jax. Don't be a hero. All right. We've only got a minute left. I'm going to quickly squeeze in this message from Juliet saying, I've avoided the dentist for too long. I've had to have 7 fillings in my most recent one that was really deep. The dentist warned me it might need root canal. It was fine for weeks, but ended up in pain with an emergency dentist. She did what she called the first stage of the root canal with a temporary filling a week ago and have had no pain. I'm just really, really nervous about what happens next. Could Dr. Rena give us some reassurances that the first stage of the root canal could work and what the next part might involve? Really, really. I know it's really hard when you haven't got a patient in front of you, but I guess, would you mind putting a bit of mind at ease and what they could expect?
Yeah, no, there's always lots of practical hints and tips we can give. The first thing I would always say is often when we do that initial first root canal is that patients, when the pain goes away, they go, oh, okay, I'll leave it. Do not wait, because it's just a ticking time bomb and the tooth will deteriorate further. So my first piece of advice is get back in as quickly as you can and get that sorted. Now, root canal is a branch of specialization in dentistry. I always recommend as much as possible for patients to try and do specific procedures with specialists. So things like braces, root canal, implants. At Israeli Dental Clinic, we cover every single specialty because I'm a big believer that you can't be a jack of all trades and master of none. Mm-hmm. So obviously the success of your root canal will massively depend on the experience and qualification of the physician. And, you know, to make sure that you get the best care, ask lots of questions. So any doubts, that's what we're here for. Ask lots of questions about the success, about your worries, about your concerns, because the dentist should be able to answer those confidently and reassure you with anything like that.
Dr. Rina, thank you so much for your time today. I know it's been a bit of a quick fire round between the extra weather and traffic, but next time we'll have you in the studio and we can have a proper chat. And to anyone who got in touch with a question, I will reply with your details. For anyone listening, where can we find you in real life and where can we find you online, Doctor?
Yes, yeah, so we are based in Motor City in the Control Tower, which is the same building as the Gymnation and Fitness First for most people that know it. It's the tallest building in Motor City. And you can find us and contact us on Instagram. We have Serenity Dental Dubai as our Instagram page.
Tell you what, I'll make it even easier. If you want to send me the word dentist or you can send me the tooth emoji, I will send you the Instagram account so you can check out them. Thank you so much for your time. Wishing you a happy, safe, dry, wonderful afternoon ahead, Dr. Rina from Serenity. As I said, if you want those details, no questions asked, no name required, 4001 with the word dentist or indeed that tooth emoji. I have to say, the painless injection sounds like an absolute game changer. Might need to get me and the girls in the chair.
Your eye health on eye.
With Moorfields Eye Hospital Dubai, world-leading experts in eye care. Moorfields, driven by your vision.
Questions coming in already for Dr. Imad Hakim, consultant ophthalmologist in cataract and refractive vision correction surgery at Moorfield. Because we are talking about, I wouldn't say going under the knife, but maybe I mean going under the laser. How are you, Dr. Imad?
Good, how are you?
I'm well, she says, wearing her reading glasses, wondering, could I be a good candidate to come and see you?
That's a good question regarding reading glasses. You have to come see me first.
I think I do. But I wanted to talk about this because it's one of the most common questions whenever we talk about eyes is safety of my husband's. And he says it repeatedly, like he's got into a bit of a joke loop on this. He's like, I've never met an optician who's had laser eye surgery. They wear glasses instead. And I'm like, that's not true. And I understand that you've had laser eye surgery yourself. Is that true?
Yes, 17 years back.
Wow, producer Chloe has. So it is definitely not just gained in popularity, it's become, you know, a real lifesaver for an awful lot of people. Would you mind breaking it down for us? You know, maybe describing some of the most prevalent methods for vision correction. You know, what's available to us right now?
Okay, let's talk about, if we talk about refractive surgery, generally speaking, we have two sections. First of all, the laser treatment or the laser vision correction, which involve the LASIK. Like, there are different types of laser, LASIK, PRK, trans-PRK, or SMILE. There are different techniques, but at the end, they are all under laser vision correction. This section number one, so I'm going to get back to this one. Number two, we have the replacement of the lens. It's like kind of cataract surgery when you remove the cloudy lens in elderly people, but you can do it also in younger generation, what we call it refractive lens exchange, in order to correct the vision if the patient or the patient are not eligible to have laser vision correction, or at the age we are, like, higher than the age we used to have laser vision correction. So there are two different sections here. So if we're talking about laser vision correction, so my preference is to have patients who are above the age of 21 until the end of 40s, we can still do laser vision correction to correct the far distance. But some of the patients, they come to us who are like end of 40s, beginning of 50s, they want to get rid of the reading glasses, which is a different story. Mm-hmm. With the laser, you cannot fix the reading distance unless you have any issue at the far distance. You can do some combination, which is a little bit complicated, so we need to explain to the patient. But if they are coming only because of the reading glasses, so the laser is not suitable for them in, like, let's say 90-95% of the cases.
So there's a few things to weigh up there. You mentioned age being one. Obviously, there must be a very extensive evaluation for you to understand which procedure is going to be the most beneficial to that patient. So can someone effectively call you at Moorfields and go, "Hi, Dr. Imad, I heard you on Dubai Eye. I want to come in and, hop into the chair." What are some of the questions and some of the testing that you would be doing before anything was booked?
So we need to check the health of the eye. We need to check the eye pressure. We need to check the anatomy of the eye, and mainly the cornea. The cornea is the very thin surface of the eye, of the anterior part of the eye, where we do perform our laser vision correction. So we need to run multiple tests, including what we call it pentacam, which is the 3D, or let's say 3D dimensional tomography of the cornea, to check the health of the cornea, the thickness of the cornea. Is the patient eligible to have laser vision correction done on the cornea? We need to rule out any diseases on the cornea which prohibit us from doing any kind of laser vision correction. Mm-hmm. And also to check, let's say, the prescription of the glasses, how high the power is, are they eligible to have laser or not. These are the main, let's say, tests or investigations we have to run before we can tell the patient you can have laser vision correction done on your eye or not. And then we move to the second part, when we discuss with the patient, when I see which procedure we can do, which technique we can do. As I mentioned before, it could be the LASIK, the femtolasik, is it the PRK or the SMILE? There are different techniques, as I said. So we can have like a discussion with the patient, explain to them the techniques, and then we can have the decision, or we can take the decision which procedure we can do it.
Okay. Dr. Imad, we've got questions coming in for you on 4001. Yeah. Yvonne's asking, what is the youngest that you would perform a procedure on? We have a teenager. We can come to that. We've also had a message asking about eye lens replacement surgery in young people. Someone has a prescription of minus 12 at the age of 25. That's Zara, who has been in touch. And Kay is asking about the link between fibromyalgia, about stress, and failing eye muscles, basically. So we're going to be unpacking that further. Dr. Ahmed Hakim, consultant ophthalmologist in cataract and refractive vision correction surgery. It's what we're talking about today, from Moorfields Eye Hospital.
Your eye health on eye.
With Moorfields Eye Hospital Dubai. Eye care for you and your children. Moorfields, driven by your vision.
And joining us from Moorfields, consultant ophthalmologist Dr. Imad Hakim. Questions for you, sir. Do you mind if we have a bit of a quick fire round from the text line? Let's do it. We have had a message from Yvonne saying, what is the youngest that you would consider performing laser eye surgery on? We have a teenager who is keen. You mentioned 21 earlier. Would you mind explaining why that age is particularly, you know, pertinent when it comes to laser eye surgery?
Yes. I mean, the minimum age would say 18. But I personally, and a lot of physicians will agree with me, that 21 or above the age of 21 is more reasonable, because we say that the full growth of the eye will be, let's say, the eye will reach the full growth by the age of 21, 25. So I personally prefer to perform laser above the age of 21. And the most important thing is to have a stable refraction, which means stable prescription of the glasses. The power of the glasses should not change for at least 1 year. Okay. So regardless of the age, if I have a patient who's 25, for instance, and he said my glasses or the power of the glasses are being changed every 6 months, I have to update my glasses, I would say let's wait until we have stability of the refraction, the power of the glasses, for at least 1 year, and then we can perform the laser.
There are
some exceptions. We can do it on 18 years old, which I have done it also, but these are special cases, like for patients who want to enter the military or the Air Force, and they have to be free of glasses. Then we can perform it on them and tell them it might change, it will come back again, but they have to have it done.
Makes sense.
This is an exception.
Okay, so it's about that stability. Okay. Dr. Imad, we've had a message from Zara saying, I wanted to ask if I could have some motivating info about eye lens replacement in young people. I've got a prescription of minus 12 at the age of 25, and I genuinely cannot function without my glasses. What are my options? I am aware of risk with retinal detachment, but due to my high prescription, I'm already at high risk of it regardless. It's making me very anxious, and I don't know who to speak to about it. Well, you're already speaking to him, so Dr. Imad is on the line. What would you say to this listener?
I would not go for lens replacement, definitely not. We have another alternative to the laser, because minus 12 is very high prescription, so laser is not recommended in this case. I would go for a lens implantation, which is a technique we use like a lens, which is similar to the contact lens, but we implant it behind the iris and in front of the lens. So we do not replace or remove the original lens. We just put it, we fold the lens and we implant it. It's like a float over the lens, which is a very safe procedure. And we can correct up to minus 20.
Okay. We've got one last question, which is about how long it lasts. Does it wear off? No name on that one on 4001. And let's look at laser eye surgery in particular. If you are a good candidate, you're in the age range, you've got the stability, is this something that is going to last forever?
I mean, we say, let's say, the laser vision correction, if there's no change in the growth of the eye, it should last forever. However, some of the patients, they mistaken the aging issue, which we call the presbyopia, when you have to wear reading glasses in the mid-40s, they said, okay, I have done laser, why I have to wear glasses? It has nothing to do with the laser here. It's an aging issue.
Mm-hmm. It's so all an aging issue. It's so depressing.
Exactly. Unfortunately, let's say, so we call it presbyopia, so it's like a nice word to prescribe it.
Okay, well, thank you.
So we have to wear reading glasses. So it's nothing to do with the laser. It's, as I said, an aging issue. So every one of us has to have reading glasses at some point.
I'm becoming like my mum.
But the farthest
I'm having
should
to like
be
read menus yes. with, you know, I'm not quite taking photos with an iPad yet, but I'm definitely reading menus with them at arm's length and kind of. But it's the little tells that mean you're hurtling towards middle age. But thank you for the work that you do to help people tackle certainly the sight side of it. Dr. Imad, we've run out of time. We haven't run out of questions. If people want to send me the word eye or the eye emoji, I will send them your details there on the Moorfields website. It's moorfields.ae.
Sure. I'll have to answer any questions.
That would be really appreciated. Thank you. I think a lot of people are considering it. And I think it's fantastic to know that you have got a safe pair of hands down there in Healthcare City. Dr. Imad, have a wonderful, safe afternoon ahead. And we'll speak to you and the team very soon indeed.
You're listening to Pets and Vets on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
With ProPlan, where the number one ingredient is always high-quality salmon, lamb, turkey and chicken.
I love talking to pet lovers. I love hearing about your animals. Messages coming in already for our Vet of the Hour. We're going to be speaking to Dr. Michaela very soon indeed. So if you've got any questions for her, you can reach out on the usual numbers and, of course, send your pictures in for your chance to win a three-month supply of ProPlan pet food. Right now, though, we're making life even easier for you pet owners. Akhed is with us today, the founder of Book My Pet. How are you, sir?
Hi, Helen. How are you? Thank you for having me.
I'm well, thanks. Tell me about who's in your house? What furry friends do you have? Who inspired you to start your business?
So definitely my furry friends inspired me to start this business, and also my experience in the industry working with Mars and Procter & Gamble all over the world in the pet industry itself. Now, the three little furry friends at home that I have is Turtley, which is a tortoise turtle, Skittles, which is a newcomer to our household, which is a cat, Scottish Fold, and Monkey, our beautiful French bulldog, who actually has a role in the company of Book My Pet as well.
Oh, really? Like a business card? What's the job title?
So we call him the Chief Experience Officer.
Quite
so every
right.
pet care provider that joins the platform needs to cater for Monkey, and then we get a thumbs up from Monkey before onboarding.
The paw of approval. Tell us a little bit about Book My Pet. What is it and what's your mission with it?
So definitely. So Book My Pet started in November of 2021, where we want to bring technology into the pet world. It's an aggregator marketplace, a one-stop destination for all your pet care needs. Whether you're looking for a mobile grooming, an in-store grooming, a pet hotel when you travel, a daycare when you're at home at work 9 to 5, you know, you don't want to leave your furry ones stressed and, you know, being naughty while you're away, or even a pet taxi ride wherever you want to go with any service provider. Mm-hmm. Everything happens seamlessly and clearly connects pet parents with trusted providers, making pet care and the pet parenting journey a breeze. Now, just let me tell you this, Helen. Picture a world where booking your pet's grooming appointment is as effortless as ordering your favorite meal through the known apps that we have today. So this is how...
You're making me lazier, and I'm here for it, to be completely honest. You mentioned before Monkey's the kind of the stamp of approval, but in terms of, you know, it's so, so important that we're working, especially when we're looking at anything to do with medical. We've all seen some grooming disaster photos, on having that trust level. How do you select your partners, your suppliers, and what's that quality control really like, Monkey aside?
Okay, monkey aside. So definitely there is a vetting process that happens through the app where we verify the providers through different areas and different criteria. We also verify them through photo shoots that we actually do. So we send our team to make sure that they apply the same standards when it comes to boarding specifically, when it comes to daycare. So there are certain requirements from the government, mm-hmm. and there are certain requirements from our side as well to make sure that they're verified and they're a perfect fit for our platform and our community. So not every provider can join the platform, and we really are very selective about the process to make sure that our brand is credible and people can feel safe whenever they book any appointment on Book My Pet for their furry ones.
Which categories or which businesses have been particularly popular? You know, what's resonating well with pet parents across the UAE?
So definitely mobile grooming is a very increasing trend that's happening now. So people are looking for convenience. They're looking for their grooming service provider to come to them at home, as well as mobile consultation. So the doctors coming in at home doing the required vaccination and doing the required checkups. Now, our partner and Dr. Michaela from Vienna Vet is actually one of our oldest providers on Book My Pet. She'll be telling you a little bit more about the mobile consultation and the mobile vaccination, how for some furry friends as well, it's a lot less stressful, especially for cats, mm-hmm. to actually go for the vet visit, whereas having the vet come to your house as well. So that's basically what's trending, more convenience, and this is what we try to cater for to our pet parenting community.
We've had a couple of messages going, what's the website, what's the app? It's Book My Pet. To Turtley, to Skittles, to Monkey, and to you, Amma, thank you so, so much. I mean, if you could send me photos on the WhatsApp, 0487155500.
Oh, absolutely.
You can't win the Pro Plan pet food because you're a friend of the show, but I would like to see them because I'm just really nosy. Congrats on the continued success. Keep us posted, and I'll be sure to check it out. I think it sounds like
thank
a real
you so much. So
time and sanity saver. Absolute superstar. Book My Pet there.
This is Pets and Vets on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
With ProPlan.
So excited to welcome to the show. And we were just talking about her earlier, one of the experts of the hour, Dr. Michaela from Vienna Vets. Thank you so much for your time. I know you've been sitting patiently waiting. We're just trying to keep everyone updated, of course, on the weather and the traffic. So, Dr. Michaela, really appreciate it. How are you today?
I'm very well. Thank you, Helen. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Now, I got home last night to hear this dog's weed on the floor, that dog's weed on the floor. You know, some very stressed out animals because of that weather. And I wondered if you'd be able to put our minds at ease. You know, are our pets quite emotionally resilient? You know, will they bounce back from some of the stresses and the fear, actually, I think, that a lot of them were experiencing, especially from the storms?
I think it's very individual. Most of the pets know even before a storm comes that goes through the whole animal life. The horses do, everyone does. Some people are sensitive to it as well. Other people have missed that sensitivity and are relying on the weather forecast. But I think some dogs, they are super happy as soon as you are home, give them a treat, play with them for 2 minutes in the garden or throw a ball in the living room or hide them something or just do back to normal. Other dogs are still shaken. You can see that in Europe as well after the New Year's Eve, all the fireworks. Here, I think we are tending to be more at home with them, and it's not so much before New Year's Eve already, all the days coming up to that, that you hear the little rockets. So I think you can prepare your pets for it, but if it's the weather like that, you best are at home with them, cuddle up in bed.
Any excuse
for that you have them.
Exactly. Yes. Something that I think has rightfully been popping up on social media as well, for what a terrible time some of the animal shelters here have had over the next few days, so do keep them in mind, is about the strays. You know, cats taking refuge where they can, in garages and in cars. So I just wanted to really flag that, guys. You know, please check in and around your car before you start it. They might have been seeking shelter, you know, in wheel arches, in the engine. So just be extra vigilant. Dr. Michaela, let's go to the text line, if you don't mind. We've had a couple of questions about one a smelly cat and one a smelly dog, if you don't mind. Danny saying, how I ended up with a kitten is a very long story, so I'll skip that and tell you. I've inherited a 9-ish week old kitten, very out of the blue. done an emergency shop, bowls, tray, carrier, little comforter, very happy. But wondering if your vet has any must-haves, toys or home stuff that we should look at. Part of the problem is that this kitten absolutely stinks. Stale cigarette smoke, dirty litter trays, really want to clean him. But everything I've read online said I just can't imagine holding this cat down to wash it. We're getting some injections and a full checkup, but any help in the meantime would be appreciated. I will not sing Smelly Cat from Friends to you, but Stinky Kitten, any insights?
Normally, no pet smells bad. It is usually if the circumstances were bad or they were unable to clean themselves or they have infections. As soon as there is an infection, you have the skin or the wound prone for bacteria. And wherever there are bacteria settling, you start with bad smells that can be yeast additionally on top. You might not see it with your own eyes, but there might be a wound that carries pus deep inside, can be an ear infection, can be diarrhea that was passed a few days back and you still have some stains on the coat. Mm-hmm. So usually a pet or a cat, a dog, a horse does not smell bad at all when they are healthy. So it's really important to bring it to the vet and have the source of the bad smell found and dealt with it.
We're going to catch up with you. We're probably going to get you on the phone actually just to make sure we can get a clearer bit of audio. Thank you so much for that. Really hope that helps, Danny. All the best. As I said, we've also had questions from Shadi saying, I've got a smelly dog who's too big to put in the bath easily. Needs something to freshen him up. Any tips? Ems is asking about what gerbils are like as a pet. She's got two daughters who are 10 and 6 who are keen. She's never had a small animal before. Would love a bit of advice. And we've also had a question asking about spaying a toy poodle. Just turned 1 year old, going through a second season. When is the right time? And there's a few other issues. Can they all be dealt with at the same time? Checking hips and dealing with a hernia too.
This is Pets and Vets on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
With ProPlan.
Good sense now and good advice with Dr. Michaela from Vienna Vets. I heard a lovely bit of research, Dr. Michaela, that I wanted to run past you, which was from the Dog Aging Project. It says that regular social interaction between dogs may lead to better health and potentially longer lives. So if your dog has a friend, they might be around a bit longer. From a medical point of view, could you see why this would make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have to start looking at any being totally holistic again. I think we've kind of evolved to compartment ourselves and our pets and say they only need the best food, they only need the best walks, they only need this. But we have to put these puzzle stones back together. And a happy dog is a socialized dog, a dog that can act like a dog, can run, can do as if he hunts or at least chases another dog. And it's nice that they are so good to us, that we are partners for them as well, but they need their dog partners as well. And I'm not saying that they cannot form wonderful, beautiful bonds with cats and mice and rabbits and horses and other species. And I think this is also a wonderful part of our jobs, that we see that on an everyday level, that all the animals in the end are harmony and want a friend and want to be heard and seen. And yes. They live longer.
They will. And I think that, you know, first of all, our dogs come back from daycare absolutely exhausted. They love that running around, but that social piece is really, really key. And it's a really big part of being a responsible pet owner, especially if you are getting a puppy, to be socializing that pet properly from the outset. Speaking of being in public spaces, we were talking earlier to Book My Pet and talking about at-home vet visits, which I think would be able to alleviate an awful lot of stress for both the animals and indeed pet parents. Now, my only experience of this, and I'm going to try and not cry, was when we sadly had our dog put to sleep and the vet came to our home and, you know, it happened there. And I think it was really helpful, especially for our other dogs. I think he kind of understood what was happening and he saw her be taken away and whatnot. But I hadn't actually thought about this being something that could perhaps be for checkups or vaccinations, especially if animals are particularly anxious. Would you mind explaining a little bit about how it works and maybe some of the situations where it can be beneficial to everyone involved?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's very important that the owner that wants a home visit speaks to us first in what regards this is. Because also when we know that that pet is really scared, then we give the good advice to not let it crawl under the bed before, be really ready, maybe with another person to help, to maybe feed even something that is a little bit stress relieving, to give some, and that we come in and say, what is the favorite treat of that dog or that cat? Let me give it, you pass it to me behind the back. I give it to them. I win their trust. And then if we really have to do anything that is an invention, like taking a blood sample, we have to bring our nurse, we have to bring all the equipment, of course, and we want to do it as short and stress-free as possible. And it, owners are stressed when we take a needle out. So we want to talk them through first how it would look like, how they can assist, how they can talk to their pet, and that we can do it as stress-free as possible. And the most important are towels, often better the towels from the owner that smell like the pet, smell like home. But we should also not forget that it might break a little bit of their trust. They think like, ho-ho, somebody came to my own home. What happened here? Why am I not safe in my home? So we will really weigh all the options on the phone before the home visit and then do the home visit as gentle as possible.
Thank you. I think that's really worth, and it just comes back to communication of, this is what we're dealing with. How can you assist? What situation is going to be best? Some lovely messages and questions coming in. David's been in touch with dog Hatchie, rescued from a building site near Gahood, aged 2 months, doing well, as well as the Dubai Dongo we and our children love. This dog is so cute. Michaela, if you were in the studio, you would be like, oh, this is why I love pets and vets. Pics of puppies coming in on the WhatsApp. This is the chance to make my day, but also the chance, of course, to win a fantastic prize. We've got a 3-month supply of Pro Plan pet food up for grabs. Moving away from cats and dogs, I've had a message from Ems saying, my daughters are 6 and 10. They're really keen to get gerbils. I've never had a small animal before, grew up with cats, previously had a dog, and currently have chickens. Ems, I need to get you on to talk about chickens. I'm concerned about going away overnight, leaving them if we go on holiday. Also, of course, them getting lost in the villa or the garden. I don't mind cleaning and feeding would be great for the girls. Not sure if I'm being naive. What do I need to know about gerbils? Over to you, Doctor.
Gerbils are wonderful animals. They can be become very, very tame and very attached to children that spend a lot of time with them, giving them little treats, training them, making little building sites where they can climb up, climb through with toilet rolls. And so it's really beautiful animals, but they should never be kept on their own. They should be at least in pairs. Also, they have very fragile bones, so you should have a really safe environment. If you give them some opportunity to climb up, the one rather could once fall down, and you need to be really careful that it is something soft that it can fall into, like shavings, carpet, anything that is really comfortable. Sand, they love sand baths as well. So if you're against having a little bit dirt here or there, then also not such a good idea, but you have to give them a big bowl of sand, and they love rolling in it and digging in it. They are the funniest animals, and I really love the idea that children can experience the social interactions between the animals by watching them. They are so cute together. They chase each other, they feed each other, they clean each other. So beautiful animals, but you have to give them a lot of things to do.
Okay, that sounds like a great task for your two daughters there. Bit of roles of responsibility. I think they live around 4 or 5 years, so could be a little lesson in life as well. Dr. Michaela, thank you so much for your time today. Really, really appreciate it. Where can we find you in real life and online as well?
We are in Vienna Veterinary Clinic. It's located in Altania Street in Onsupem. And we have a beautiful team of like-minded vets and support staff that will attend to any of your questions.
Thank you so much. Really, really appreciate it. We'll have you in the studio next time when the roads are a little bit kinder. In the meantime, though, wishing you and the team a lovely, lovely afternoon ahead. Dr. Michaela there. And thank you for downloading this episode of the Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast. Don't forget, you can subscribe. You'll get direct to your phone as soon as it's out. And you can listen to me live on Dubai Eye 103.8, Monday to Friday between 2 and 5pm.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.